This is West Virginia Morning on West Virginia Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Beth Voorhees. We often hear about urban cities throughout the country that are dealing with abandoned, dilapidated buildings. But communities in West Virginia are struggling with neighborhood blight, too. The West Virginia Hub is working with partners across the state to plan a three-day event in Huntington this October. The summit will help citizens across West Virginia who are working to fix blighted, abandoned, and dilapidated properties. Civic groups in Huntington have been collaborating on this type of work and have made great strides. And in Charleston, two nonprofits are working to rebuild and remove dilapidated homes in their neighborhood, the Westside Flats. Roxy Todd took a tour of the neighborhood to see the work that's being done to revive it.
At the heart of the Westside Flats neighborhood is Mary C. Snow Elementary School. The neighborhood has the second highest percentage of African American residents in West Virginia. The school itself is named in honor of West Virginia's first female African American principal of an integrated school. Snow wasn't only an educator. She was also known for her civic engagement in this neighborhood. And for most community organizers here, like Reverend Matthew Watts, the memory of the real Mary C. Snow is a reminder of what individuals can do to help revive the West Side.
Some people have just stayed here. You know, they want to see it turn around again. And it can, and we believe that it will. That despite the vacant houses, there's still 4,000 reasons in the broader West Side, those are the kids, as to why we should fight. They deserve a chance to live in a safe, healthy, wholesome place that inspires them.
Watts is the CEO of a nonprofit called Hope Community Development Corporation. He says the dilapidation of buildings reduces home values and can become a magnet for crime.
On those four blocks, there's 61 vacant structures. 61. And they pose a public health threat in terms of public safety, public health, et cetera, for the children and families. And we believe that it contributes significantly just to the overall negative feeling that kids in this neighborhood have.
But as Watts walks along 3rd Avenue and points to homes with fresh flower beds out front and homes that are well maintained, he says it's clear that not everyone on the West Side has given up hope. Many of the houses here still possess a historic charm from the days when this was an up-and-coming neighborhood for middle-class African-American families. During segregation, this was also the cultural center of activity for the Black community in Charleston, including tourists who were not allowed to stay downtown. But now, middle-class families have moved away. In the last year, Reverend Watts and his organization have spent $250,000 to remove asbestos and prepare 12 vacant homes for demolition. The removal of these structures was a partnership between Hope CDC, the City of Charleston, and the Charleston Urban Renewal Authority. Bob Hardy has been helping the neighborhood since the 1990s. Before anyone else had a vision to restore this neighborhood, Hardy was working to rehab dilapidated homes along 2nd Avenue.
As you look around, you can see some of the houses that we built. And we would like to continue to do that. And, you know, with changing times, changing funding, you know, it's become a struggle. Because working in a poor community is not the easiest thing to do. It's not profitable.
Hardy is a licensed contractor, and his father was a shop teacher. As executive director of the Charleston Economic Community Development Corporation, he has helped build 10 new homes in the Westside Flats neighborhood. He's helped rehab about 50 houses. Hardy grew up in the Westside Hills, which looks down into this neighborhood. His vision for restoring this area came because he believes it's like the front yard of the entire Westside. He sees the potential here to develop affordable housing because of the neighborhood's close proximity to downtown. The community has been supporting a large part of these efforts, even though 1 in 3 residents here are living in poverty. And though he's been involved in this work for over 20 years, Hardy says he believes this neighborhood is going to turn around and the people here are going to pull themselves out of poverty.
The race is not given to the swift or to the strong, but to those that endure until the end. My mother gave me that. Never quit.
Together, Hardy and Watts are working to continue to rehab more homes. They are each cautiously optimistic that Charleston officials can partner with them more in the future to restore the Westside Flats neighborhood. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Roxy Todd in Charleston.
And in other parts of the state, public agencies, private businesses, foundations, and nonprofit groups are constantly striving to inject life and energy into their local communities. As Sarah Lowther Hensley reports, there's no one-size-fits-all formula for successful community development, but sometimes having the right person in the right place at the right time can make all the difference.
It's early evening here at the Joe and Throw Co-op in downtown Fairmont. The business, a partnership between a pottery studio and a coffee and craft beer cafe, has only been open for about 2 months, but it's already attracting new people to downtown.
My name's Bob Lane. I'm a coffee roaster here in Fairmont, and I also work the coffee half of the Joe and Throw Co-op.
And my name is Michael Ray, and I'm a potter and pottery instructor here at the Joe and Throw Co-op.
These two guys met at a beard-growing contest, part of a celebration of the state's 150th birthday last year. They started setting up next to each other at the local farmers market and other venues, but they say they became partners in this bricks-and-mortar business because of Kate Green, executive director of Main Street Fairmont. Lane says Green connected them with an investor and helped get their business off the ground. He says she's very good at connecting key players.
A lot of us are here, but we just didn't know how to connect and like what we could do to really make our town better. It's nice to have a little direction there.
For her part, Green says it's all about relationship building, collaboration, and creativity.
We're a nonprofit, grassroots, so a huge portion of what we do has to be creative because we lack the resources otherwise. And so we're always looking for ways that people fit in and who can help us reach the end goal.
And that end goal, Green says, is a livable community, a sense of place and connection. Next door to Joe and Throw is another new business, All Things Herbal Local Market. Owner Krista Blaze says Green organized opportunities that helped her go from dreaming about opening a business to actually doing it.
Kate's been wonderful. I did the small business boot camp that they did early this winter, and then that kind of gave me the confidence to go ahead and get started.
All the pieces and partners are falling into place, says Green.
We are in a very unique situation right now in Fairmont where our community leaders have that vision. And they are ready to embrace every possible opportunity and move forward. And to have that going for us is pretty big.
Green says Fairmont has solid infrastructure for moving forward, a plentiful supply of historic and available buildings, and many, many creative people willing to get involved. She launched a weekly gathering, the 1230 Room, where those creative people can come pitch an idea and find partners. She says finding money is always a challenge, and she would like to see some state funding dedicated to Main Street programs across the state. Green grew up in Fairmont, but then moved to Montana. 2 years ago, she and her family returned to build their life in her hometown. Catherine Rosdick, Fairmont's Director of Planning and Development, says Green has brought a new energy to community development efforts, an energy that comes from Green's own sense of place and connection.
She's all about building up the community in which she lives, and Fairmont being her hometown. You know, you can kind of see that in the way that she acts and works and plays even.
The Marion County Chamber of Commerce has recognized Kate Green with its Visionary Award, an award that's not given every year. Chamber President Tina Shaw says it's only given under extraordinary circumstances. She says the energy and synergy downtown Fairmont is experiencing is something special, and she credits Green.
She works very well with outside groups. She works very well with her board, with the community, with businesses downtown. And I think she has a very calm effect of things are going to happen downtown.
And Green promises things are going to happen downtown.
This is a great place to be. And I keep telling everybody, I'm like, 2 years, you give us 2 more years and Fairmont will be, it'll be a whole new place.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Sarah Lowther Hensley in Fairmont.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:43. Partly sunny skies today. There is a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 80s. Clouding up tonight with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Lows in the 60s. Partly sunny on Wednesday with a chance of rain and thunderstorms Wednesday night into Thursday and Friday.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit wvdrs.org for employer services.
How noisy is natural gas development? Well, it depends on what you're hearing, whether it's drilling, fracking, or processing gas. This summer, Pennsylvania state regulators are trying to get a handle on one of the most persistently noisy places, compressor stations. As State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick reports, these sites are necessary to process and transport gas through pipelines.
Shale gas development is a noisy business. Companies start by drilling wells with a big rig. There's a lot of trucks and heavy equipment. Next, millions of gallons of water are pumped in for the fracking phase to release the gas and get the well into production. But once the well is producing gas, things quiet down. The people and equipment are gone. It's basically just a bunch of pipes in the ground. There isn't much to see or hear at this one, operated by Seneca Resources in the Loyal Sock State Forest in north central Pennsylvania.
Natural sound, natural gas.
That's Seneca spokesman Rob Boulware. His company is one of the biggest operators in the state forest system. Although things are quiet here, there's another place that can remain noisy for years, even decades. Seneca's Hagerman Compressor Station in the Loyal Sock Forest came online last fall. It's capable of processing up to 400 million cubic feet of gas per day. Compressor stations are needed to keep the gas flowing. Each unit looks sort of like a large shed with a giant fan on the end. There are legitimate issues with how they affect air quality, but the sites are also a significant source of noise pollution. The engines hum constantly, pulling gas out of the wells and pushing it through pipelines. Ian Vranich is a manager with the company's midstream operations. He oversees sites like this one. He explains that each compressor unit has its own separate building with 8 to 10 inches of insulation.
Whenever the engine's running, we try to keep everything as contained and keep the noise contained inside the building so we're not, you know, passing that noise out into the open air environment.
The State Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, which manages public forest land, is trying to get a better handle on this constant source of noise, which can disturb people and wildlife. Right now, compressor stations on state forest land can't exceed 55 decibels at 300 feet from the site. But the agency's working with Penn State University acoustics professor Tom Gabrielson to reconsider those rules.
300 feet is an arbitrary distance. Is that really the point at which the annoyance should be measured in the state forest? And if the nearest hiking trail is 1,000 feet, from the station, then a reference point of 300 feet doesn't make much sense.
There are only about a dozen compressor station sites on state forest land right now, but the department predicts up to 200 could eventually be built. As Gabrielson explains, the decibel level only measures loudness, but there are many other factors that affect how noise is perceived, from frequency to the topography of the area, even the weather and the wind speed on a particular day. He plays four different sounds, all at the same average decibel level, but points out they're widely different in terms of annoyance. He starts with rain and thunder, then a helicopter flying overhead, dogs barking, and birds chirping.
Some of those I could sleep through easily. Some of them would wake me up.
Paul Karpich is one of those people who gets woken up. He lives in Susquehanna County in northeastern Pennsylvania, one of the most productive areas of the Marcellus Shale. His home is within 2 miles of three different compressor stations. The closest one is about 3,000 feet away.
You lay in bed, you can hear this thing running. Sounds like there's a truck in the driveway, now 30 feet away.
In an effort to single out the most irritating parts of the noise, Penn State professor Tom Gabrielson set up microphones that recorded for 2 weeks around a compressor station in the Tyodotten Forest in the north-central part of the state. He's still crunching the data, but hopes to help regulators craft more nuanced guidelines for the industry.
So we have a really good measurement set for the noise from one particular compressor station. And it's sort of the start of a study. It's hopefully a beginning.
But the rules would only apply to the state forest system. And as Pennsylvania's gas production keeps breaking new records, companies are building more and more compressor stations, and most of them aren't in state forests. Noise regulations can vary by county. Although federal regulations exist for compressor sites on interstate pipelines, there's currently no statewide sound standard. Marie Cusick, State Impact Pennsylvania.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.